Why pay more for a separate CoQ10 supplement? Enjoy twice the benefits with SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced from the number one doctor, pharmacist, and cardiologist recommended beet brand for heart health support. The new SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced by Human is now infused with CoQ10. That's essentially like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 ingredients support nitric oxide production, healthy blood pressure, healthy CoQ10 levels, and heart-healthy energy with two tasty chews a day. Plus, SuperBeats Heart Chews Advance are plant-based, so you get heart-healthy energy without stimulants. For a limited time, get a free 30-day supply of SuperBeats Heart Chews on all bundles and 15% off your first order by going to radiobeats.com and using promo code DEAL. That's radiobeats.com, code DEAL.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You are listening to the Step Back's Day-to-Day NBA Podcast, powered by FanSided. Hello, and welcome to the Step Back's Day-to-Day NBA Podcast. I am Jason Mann. And with me today is my partner on the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast, Rich Craich. Rich, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So we are going to delve a little bit into history. This could almost be an Over and Back episode, but something interesting happened the other day. There was a game with four overtimes. The Knicks and the Hawks played a classic. It's pretty hard not have a classic if you're playing four more overtimes, although there might be a couple of exceptions here that we talk about. But I felt like diving into some of the past ones just to kind of give an overview of how rare and special that is in NBA history.
Yeah, no, and I think your point about it always being kind of special and always being a great game, because it's impossible not to. I mean, there's been, you know, multiple times where, you know, obviously the score has been close and it's been close again and then it's gone to, you know, so there's no way to make it an unexciting unless, like, you know, pre-shot clock era, which we'll talk about here in a little bit, where, you know, people don't score and they just kind of hold the ball. That is not exciting. But pretty much in the shot clock era, any time it's four overtimes or five overtimes or whatever, it's going to be exciting. Pretty much any overtime game I consider pretty exciting as well. I mean, just because, you know, your every possession kind of matters for a set amount of time. And that's always fun in basketball because sometimes it can kind of get away from you in a game. So.
Yeah, and there were definitely times, I don't know if you watched how much of it or if you got a chance to watch it, but there were definitely times in the Hawks-Knicks game where it got pretty ugly, but just they kind of stuck with it, and it was thrilling through the end. There was even a brief outpouring of scoring toward the end. It was a very even though there was some bad basketball being played or some sloppy basketball being played in there, it was just exciting to see that environment just naturally.
Yeah, often the games aren't necessarily the best basketball you've ever seen in your life, but they're often like they get fun bad after a while because everyone's tired and everyone's like missing close shots and there's just oddities happening and you got guys, you know, playing 60 minutes at a time. So yeah, it's never probably the best games, quote unquote, but it's always, I would consider them always very entertaining and exciting games.
Right. Yeah. I mean, even bad basketball is generally, at least in the pro levels, is still, you know, is still fun. So
unless it's the Brooklyn Nets, that's not very fun.
Well, you know, depending on the situation for sure. So the only game that has gone to six overtimes is the Indianapolis Olympians against the Rochester Royals from January 6, 1951. This is, of course, pre-shot clock. The Olympians played seven players. The Royals played eight players. So probably some tired guys in there. We don't know the exact minute totals in the box score. But although we do know that Red Holzman, the future Knicks coach, played 76 of the game, 78 minutes, and scored 3 points.
That's hard. That's yes. Impressive.
Yes. So there were two of the six overtimes were scoreless. The highest point total in any of the overtimes was four, which both teams had 4 points in the fifth overtime. So obviously a 75-73 game, six overtimes, not a lot of points being scored. As you mentioned, lots of you know, lots of holding the ball and stalling. That was a kind of a key tactic pre-shot clock, which is one of the reasons why they instituted the shot clock. And Holzman later said that this was one of the games that he felt like were, you know, pretty important, as long along with that infamous 1918 Lakers Pistons game that we've talked about on Over Back before, that, you know, eventually led the NBA to like, okay, we need to do something about this, and eventually bring in the shot clock.
Yeah, not the most exciting game. And you look at the stat lines as well, and you look at the scoring output. I mean, all you have to really look at is that final score of 75-73, 6 overtime, to realize that's probably not a very entertaining game at all. But yeah, a lot of really cool names in here. A lot of like kind of legendary NBA figures in here. You got Alex Graza is in there. Arnie Risen's in there, as you mentioned. Red Holzman. So a lot of really cool kind of like historic figures that would play a huge role in the evolution of the NBA in this game. So
yeah, Bobby Wanzer, who was for the Royals, who, you know, was a key part. The Royals actually won the championship this season, the 51 season. They broke up the Lakers dynasty, the George Mikan dynasty. It was the only year that the Royals won during, or any other team won during that period. Mikan was hurt during their playoff series in which the Royals beat them. But so it's obviously they're a good team. The Olympians were a pretty unique team in Indianapolis. They were actually owned by five former University of Kentucky basketball players. Four of them, including Graz and Ralph Beard, had played in the 48 Olympics, which led to the name Olympians. And eventually, Graz and Beard got involved, were linked to a point-shaving scandal at Kentucky, and they were banned from the NBA for life. And this was during a time there were a whole lot of college scandals in involving point shaving and gambling. The NBA was relatively unaffected by that, I think mostly because the NBA was – no one cared about the NBA at that point, so there was no reputation to besmirch. but the Olympians survived for 2 years after the scandal then folded. And there's some thought that the Olympians were particularly targeted because, you know, there was a – they were owned by the players rather than having an actual owner, and the other owners didn't particularly care for that situation. But yeah, Beard and Graza were great. Particularly Graza was, you know, was a really, like, what, you know, if he had been able to play, might have been, it certainly would have been one of the great players of his era, might have been like a top 50 candidate. I mean, he had that level of talent going on.
Absolutely.
And the next, there are 2 5 overtime games in NBA history. The first from November 24th, 1949, the Syracuse Nationals beating the Anderson Packers, 125-123. Anderson was in Indiana City, by the way. This is Anderson's only season in the NBA. They had come over from the NBL. For those who don't know, there were two leagues that merged together in the beginning of this season, the NBL and the BAA, to form the NBA. The NBL had actually been the better league when they started, the older league, and then eventually the larger markets of the BAA, you know, and taking some talent, some teams over there, led to the merger. But Anderson had previously won the championship in the NBL. Duff Shays had come over with the Nationals. This was his first year in the NBA, and he had 18 points. The leading scorer actually in the game was Johnny McNosky, who had 21 points for the Nationals. He was Russian. I looked him up, and there were two things that are possible, and I couldn't confirm either one. There was an article that I was not able to read but saw a headline for, that he may have actually changed his name during the 50s, presumably, you know, during the Red Scare era, because it was Russian, to a more American-friendly name. And he also may have written a book about basketball and the future of basketball during that time. I could only find a link to that, but I'll have to do some more.
Yeah, hopefully maybe a listener will be able to clue you in on something. That's really cool. Yeah, that's good. That'd be good information if we get a hold of
Johnny Mac research and see exactly, if I can figure out. But the Nationals had lost in the finals to the Lakers. So they were a very good team during this time. And so this is even though, of course, it's pre-shot clock, 125-123 is a more reasonable score, I think, in a 5 overtime game.
Yeah, absolutely. And pretty fundamentally similar game to kind of what we get these days. I mean, the score, you know, obviously a little probably would be a little bit higher these days, you know, with a 5 overtime game. But yeah, 125-123, that seems pretty reasonable. It's definitely not like the, you know, the 6 overtime one that we just talked about. I'm always fascinated too by early, you know, NBA history and NBL, like the towns that have NBA teams and professional basketball teams like Anderson, Indiana, you know, playing at the Anderson High School Gymnasium. It's just such a far cry. It's just amazing to know that that league evolved, you know, to what we have today. It's just, it's unbelievable knowing the towns that some of these teams played in and the arenas they played in and whatnot. It's just crazy to think about.
Yeah. And that first year in the, and in the new NBA, there were, I think 16 teams, that ended up being part of that merger. And then eventually over the next few years, a bunch of those teams folded, and by 53, 54, they were down to 8 teams, you know, the, I guess, original 8, so to speak, that, you know, lasted in the league till the decade, until expansion began, you know, in the early 60s, and then, you know, full force by the late 60s. So it was a pretty big mess there for a few years in terms of just crazy teams having cities and a lot of instability and so forth. As we mentioned previously, the NBA did not have much of a reputation at the time. So
there's a reason they were in Anderson, Indiana, playing at a high school gym. Nobody cared. So
indeed. So next, the more recently, the other 5 overtime game in NBA history is from November 9th, 1989. The Milwaukee Bucks against the Seattle Supersonics. And the Bucks won 155-154. That is a that's quite the high-scoring game. Of course, you get that many overtimes, and not a surprise. Leading the way there was Dale Ellis with 53 points in 69 minutes, including 20 points in the 5 overtimes. Xavier McDaniel had 37 points. Derek McKee had 24 points for the Sonics. Ricky Pierce off the bench for the Bucks at 36 points. Of course, he would be a Sonic not too much later after this. And Alvin Robertson, 28. Jack Sigma had 23 for the Bucks. Of course, the former Sonics legend. So definitely some exchanging of players here who had been previously or would in the future be on the team.
Yeah, it's funny, and actually, you know, strangely enough, Jack Sigma, who you mentioned, obviously the Supersonics legend, he was 9 for 9 for the first 3 games of the season. This was the 5th game of the season, I believe, for the Bucks, and he was 9 for 9 from the free throw line, pretty good. You know, hey, I got this. He missed the first free throw with 5 seconds left in the third overtime, and that would have given the Bucks a 3-point lead. And then Dale Ellis tied it with a jumper with 2 seconds left to force the fourth overtime, rather. So, just an interesting story there where Jack Sigma, you know, I'm guessing that he tanked on purpose. Jack Sigma to let the Supersonics win, but it failed because his Bucks unfortunately still won. So
yeah, maybe the perm on his head was just a little bit too heavy, and unable to, you know, just get that last one in. You know, that's I don't think we're allowed to do a Jack Sigma reference without mentioning the perm. I believe that's
No, it is in the bylaws. Yeah, it is in the Jack Sigma bylaws that you must refer to the perm. So there we go. We got that. We're out of the way. You can scratch it off. We're good to go. Executive order from our lovely president, I believe, was that anytime you mention Jack Sigma, you got to talk about the perm. So,
absolutely, yes. So the 6 players fouled out in the game, and yes, it was. It seems like quite the thrilling one. We unfortunately don't have a video over there. There was a good Vice Sports article written about it in the within the last year or so. That's a good resource to check out for anyone who is more interested in that game.
Yeah, and I believe Dale Ellis, unfortunately Basketball Reference only goes to 83-84 for this, but his 69 minutes appears to be the highest of all time by any player. It's hard to tell before that because obviously box scores are a little tricky, but a few articles mention that is the highest minute total of any game ever. Even you know, historical statisticians said the same thing as well. And not to be outdone, though, Xavier McDaniel had 68, and he is the second most. So those guys did not get a whole lot of time off in this game, but that is a remarkable, just the idea of playing an NBA game for, you know, nearly 70 minutes is just unbelievable.
Yes, the 6 overtime game, apparently Holzman played 76 games. 76
oh, right,
in that game. Now, I'm not 100% sure of that, obviously, but and that may not, you know, obviously some of the records may not go back that far, but it would stand to reason that's a possibility. But either way, that's a lot of minutes.
But he didn't move because they were holding the ball, so he cheated.
And in fairness,
so
Dale Ellis scored 50 more points than Holzman did, so we'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
A slim 50-point margin for Dale Ellis there.
Yes.
So.
And Sean Kemp was on the Sonics during this time but did not play in the game. He was only 5 games into his career, and he was, you know, he was basically out of high school. I mean, he was like a year out, and I think he had – did he actually play in junior college?
I think we had this discussion before. I think he enrolled in junior college, but I don't know that he ever played.
There
was the Kentucky thing and all that issue going on. So I think he just never played. So
right.
He was in a community college, or a junior college rather, but never did play.
Gotcha. Well, there you go.
I think. I don't quote me, but I'm pretty sure we've had this exact discussion, and I think that's what we came to the conclusion of. But
fair enough. We've had a lot of discussions, which I can't remember the details of all of them, unfortunately.
Talked to you too much. But too damn much.
Yes. So now on to the four overtime games. The very first one in NBA history is was actually a playoff game. It was the Boston Celtics against the Syracuse Nationals, Game 2 of the Eastern Division Final, March 21st, 1953. Boston actually won the series 2-0. It was the franchise's first ever playoff series win. They dated back to the 46 season, so it was like 7-8 years into their run. Of course, they would win a few playoff
series. That's going to be it for them, because they peaked real early and then just never really were a force ever again, unfortunately. Poor Boston. So.
Yes. So Boston did end up winning this 111-105.
Boston sports, too. They just can't, you know, get a break of anything. Football, basketball, they just, you know, it just no hasn't, success coming there.
Hasn't gone
baseball,
well for them,
geez. Yeah. I mean, the last time they won a World Series was 1900 or something like that. I mean,
something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
So Bob Cousy had 50 points in this game, 30 of 32 from the free throw line, which I believe is still a playoff record. Jordan came close to, but has not broken that. That was, I believe, tied for a long time with the actual record as well. I believe Wilt was 28 of 32 in that 100-point game. That was recently broken, you know, two, three years ago by Dwight Howard in one of those insane, you know, Hackett-White situations. Right. But
in the most pathetic manner possible,
right.
Unfortunately.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So even though, you know, that was a relatively high scoring game, it was dominated by fouls, especially in overtime. Each team was afraid to let the other gain a significant lead. I mean, the idea was it was kind of like a hack of, you know, type situation where if you foul, at least you're not going to get like a, you know, major lead going on and obviously stalling and that kind of stuff. But the tactic by the Celtics was basically just, hey, keep the ball in Cousy's hands because he was such a great ball handler for his time. And you know, he would make the free throws, obviously, and obviously did that. So 50 points during the game. I believe that set a playoff record at the time. Don't quote me on that for absolute sure, but I believe that was a playoff record, the first 50-point playoff game in NBA history. So next is, and I couldn't find a whole lot about this one, but it was a Portland Trail Blazers 131, Cleveland Cavaliers 129 game from October 18th, 1974.
Yeah, Portland's going to be – remember that name because they're going to come up a lot, like shockingly a lot of times, the Portland Trailblazers. So you'll see that coming up a little bit. Yeah, I was having trouble finding a whole lot about this game too. But, of course, that is why on the Over and Back we did an entire series over the summer about the 70s, because that is like the big old like shrug of NBA history. Nobody really does much about it. And it's just kind of the black sheep of NBA lore. But, yeah, it was really hard to find information for this one or a lot of games in the 70s, unfortunately.
Yeah, the scoring the leaders were Austin Carr with 34, Dick Snyder with 25, Bingo Smith with 20, and Jim Jones with 18. Jim Jones will come up again in a little bit. The Blazers, John Johnson and Sidney Wicks both had 29. Jeff Petrie 24. Bill Walton had 18. I believe this was Walton's rookie season. And Lenny Wilkins, the former Cavalier, had 15 points in this game. This was his first and only season as a player with the Blazers. I believe he was their coach. And this was actually the first game of the season, interestingly enough. So imagine playing four overtime game
just
in your
start your
season.
Year yeah. Yeah, like, oh no, like they would probably soar the rest of the year now, because you know, especially, you know, even in those days too, it's much, you know, easier to travel these days. I mean, it's a little bit harder too because the schedule's a little bit more rugged and the games are a little bit more rugged, but yeah, I not a good way to start your season for your guys and their health, I'm sure. So
yeah, but, so yeah, this was actually Bill Walton's first professional game.
Oh wow! Okay, cool. Yeah, 18.
So yeah, and then this was Wilkins.
Like, you know what? My feet already hurt. I'm kind of done. I think we can safely blame this game on all of Bill Walton's injury history.
Probably.
Right?
Yeah.
I think we can do that. Let's do that. I'm going to do that.
That's okay. Safe. Yeah.
That's a decree. Our executive order of this show is that this caused Bill Walton's history of injuries. So there we go. Done.
Fair enough. Next, our only ABA entry. The San Diego Conquistadors 176 over the New York Nets 166 on Valentine's Day 1975. Julius Erving had his career high of 63 points. Brian Taylor for the Nets also 26. The Conquistadors, or the Qs as they were called, the leaders were Bo Lamar with 45, Travis Machine Gun Grant with 30, Warren Jabali also had 22. We talked a lot about Warren Jabali in our 70s series as well. We talked a bit about the Qs, and they had some kind of crazy stuff going on, which we won't get into here, but if you are more interested in the Qs, and why wouldn't you be, you should definitely go back to our Over and Back 70s series and check them out. I think some crazy ownership stories there, as well as Wilt Chamberlain spending a year as the San Diego coach, although he was not the coach at this point.
Right, yeah, he was supposed to be the player, too. He was supposed to be a player coach, and they told him, no, you can't do that in the NBA. So that
there was a lawsuit, yes. So.
Yeah, very fun here. But yeah, I love the quote from Julius Erving after this game. He says, I've never been in a game like this before. I hope I'm never in one like this again. Unless we win, it's disheartening to lose. So, like, yeah. I love the wave of emotion there. Like, I don't want to do this game ever again, unless we win. That's but we didn't. Yes. But we didn't, so it sucked.
He had 23 rebounds in the game as well, and it was 3 hours and 10 minutes to play. So that's – which actually I guess is not really terrible for four overtimes. But
no, we're going to talk about the most recent game. I think went four or whatever. The one last week was like 4 hours or something like that. So
I don't know if it was four, but it was definitely long, yeah. It felt like a long time. It was exciting, but yes, felt like a long time. So next, from January 29th, 1980, the Cleveland Cavaliers 154 over the Los Angeles Lakers 153. The Lakers would go on to win the championship this year. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, 42 points. Magic Johnson with 30. Jamal Wilkes, 23 for the Cavaliers. Mike Mitchell, 34. Dave Robish, 32. And Randy Smith with 31. The Lakers looked like they were going to win. They were up by 5 with 1:47 left in the fourth quarter, but the Cavs scored 6 unanswered points. And Jim Jones, who had played in the previous NBA Cavs versus Trailblazers overtime game for the Cavs. He had just gone over to the Lakers, badly wanted to beat his former teammates, and then he committed a foul with 2 seconds left on Mike Mitchell, who made both free throws to secure the win. So, not good luck for Jim Jones.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Stan Albeck's quote said, that's the best basketball game I've ever been involved with from an entertainment standpoint. So, and he had been a former Lakers assistant as well. He said, I'm spent. I'm just hollow-eyed. And Clyde Frazier was on the Cavs that season, but only played 27 minutes that season, did not play in the game. So what, it would have been cool. We did not get this game would not be available in video anyway. But at least it would have been cool to imagine what Magic versus Clyde would have been like. But unfortunately, that did not happen. There also was a chance at Magic versus Pistol Pete during the season, but the Jazz, who were mad at Maravich, held him out of the game and ended up trading him shortly after. So some classic theoretical matchups did not happen because those guys being at the end of their careers. I mean, I guess they couldn't really, at least in this situation, Clyde, not enthusiastic about Cleveland anyway, and was healthy enough to be playing this game, I presume.
Yeah, absolutely. No, Magic Pistol Pete would have been a great little matchup to see, but darn. Well. Oh, well.
So next we have the Atlanta Hawks against the Seattle Supersonics. The Hawks winning 127-122. The Hawks are going to be involved in quite a few of these as well coming up. February 19th, 1982, Fast Eddie Johnson had 34 and John Drew had 31 for the Hawks. And Eddie Johnson actually was involved in the he scored 7 straight in the final overtime to lead his team to finally victory. He played 61 of the 68 minutes for the Sonics. Gus Williams 24, Fred Brown at 22, Jack Sikma had 22, as who was also in that 5 overtime game for the Bucks. And Kevin Lockery said that I have been involved in pro basketball for 20 years as a player and coach, and I can't remember anything like it. Funny thing, Kevin Lockery was the coach of the 4 overtime game for the Nets against the Accused.
Right. Were you crapping, Kevin? 75. You have.
So he maybe just doesn't have the best memory.
No, probably not.
It was something that was kind of like it.
Yeah, right. It was.
He was on the winning end this time, so maybe that is why.
Maybe, I've never been in a multiple overtime game where I won, is what he meant to say.
Right, exactly.
At a loss for words there. But yes. Kevin. But I guess it's good that our basketball coaches have short memories, because if they had long memories, they'd all be dead when they're like 40, because they stress out too much. So
probably, yes. So the next one is from 1984, the Chicago Bulls 156, Portland Trailblazers 155, March 16th, 1984. This is the year before the Jordan comes to the Bulls. So they led by the esteemed Quentin Daly and Dave Greenwood. Lots of fun times there.
Oh, yeah. It's a team. We talked in our Christmas special that we did this year a lot about, not this team specifically. We talked about the one 87, I believe.
86.
Or 86, rather, when Jordan was in here. But a lot of the guys still kind of hang around, so we talk a little bit about the history of the Bulls throughout this mid-80s, and it is a checkered past or checkered history for many of these guys, but it's a very wild team at that point. But, Quentin Daly, Dave Greenwood, a little Dave Corzine action in here, too. But, it's kind of funny. One thing that I thought was really interesting about this game for Portland, they got 41 points from Jim Paxson, which is incredible. Yeah. Just to even think about happening. 24 from Wayne Cooper off the bench. I thought this was very fascinating, though. Wallace Bryant, a Bulls player, played just 1 minute. Can you imagine playing 1 minute in a four overtime game? Like, don't even put me in. Like, what? Don't even bother. Like, at that point, like, why am I playing a minute? Like, that's, I just found that hilarious because I couldn't find any other instance of a guy having less minutes played in a four overtime game than old Wallace Bryant. So there you go.
Wallace Bryant, yeah. Yeah, Jim Paxson was actually like a second team All NBA player, like 1 year. Like, he was actually, for a brief time, was, you know, like at that level, which is interesting. You know, not a guy you would necessarily think of being on that level, yet he was two-time All-Star as well. He might have been. He might have had two-time All-NBA. I'm trying to remember exactly, but that's when I was kind of looking up you know, different guys who had been at that level. He was one of the list of guys that you know, was quite surprising.
Yeah, actually, yeah, I'm looking at it right now. 83, 84, he was All-NBA, but that was the only one. But yeah, he had two straight All-Star games, and yeah, averaged 20 points a game in consecutive years as well. So yeah, go Jim Paxson.
Yeah, a little better than you might think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's cool. Okay. I apologize for my Jim Paxson slander.
Could you dare disparage Jim Paxson? Because I think John Paxson is the more famous Paxson, you know, modern, obviously because of his accomplishment with the Bulls. But yes, Jim has Jim probably had the better individual playing career, at least.
Yeah, absolutely.
So next we have the Golden State Warriors 150, New Jersey Nets 147, February 1st, 1987. This is quite an interesting one with a king having a great night, but not the king you might think of.
Yeah, Albert King, Bernard's brother. He had 42 minutes off the bench, 19 points and 8 rebounds. Old Albert King. What is your favorite Albert King memory?
Ooh, I'm going to have to think about
only that. One, and you only get one.
I would say Albert King probably is scoring 19 points and 8 rebounds in this game. Yeah.
And logging 42 minutes off the bench in a 4-overtime game. That's a good one. That was mine as well. That's so crazy how we do that. But other interesting stuff, Joe Barry Carroll, he cared on this night because he scored a game-high 43 points. So,
yes.
Chris Malone was there too. Yeah, I forgot.
Yeah, I think George Karl was the coach of during this time, of course.
Yes, he was. Yes.
Yeah, George Karl, of course. Both of us recently read his book, and I was able to do the interview with him on Over and Back. So fun times there.
Yeah, he talks about this team because it is an emerging team. It's like, you know, things are coming together. Chris Mullin's here. Some guys are in. It's like, all right, cool. We got something going here. And then the next year they completely tanked and fired him midway through the season. So,
yeah.
But hey, at this year they made the playoffs and, you know, they upset Utah in the first round and then they bowed out to the Lakers. So it looked like they had something built. And then I think they went like 24 and 40 or something like that. And Carl was gone. But they got stability under Don Nelson a little bit after that. And then, you know. Yeah.
Things went all right.
Yeah, and then they had a really horrible 15 years, but now everything's good. So
there you go. Yeah, up and down for the Warriors. Yeah. Chris Mullin at 25 in this game. Each of the Warrior starters was in double figures. This was not a good Nets team. A better team for the Lakers. I believe this was the first time since the 50s where a team overcame a 2-0 lead in a playoff series when the Warriors beat the Jazz in that series that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and other interesting facts real quick. No Nets scored over 30 points. Pro Washington had the team high 29. And Buck Williams, he played 60 minutes but scored only 18. But he made up for it by 27 rebounds. So not bad.
Not bad.
And our buddy Orlando Woolridge, he had a triple-double, 24 points, 10 assists, 11 rebounds. So
yeah, probably, I wonder how many turnovers. Only 5 turnovers.
That's not bad. That might be a career low for Orlando, so
bad. All things considered. Right. Yeah. So the next game from 1997, 10 years in the future, the Phoenix Suns 140, the Portland Trail Blazers 139 from November 14th, 1997. Jason Kidd, 56 minutes, 6 points, but 16 assists and 7 rebounds. That's almost, it's not even quite the Jason Kidd triple-double special because he didn't get up there, but that's a fun Jason.
I feel like he should have more. I feel like in a game where they score 140, he should have more points, right? Like, that's like really low scoring by even Jason Kidd standards, so that's fascinating.
Well, there were 6 6 Suns with in double figures in that game, so I'm sure he contributed to being there. I have not watched much of this. I wonder how good and interesting the Jason Kidd Kevin Johnson backcourt was, because that's sort of a interesting one for his time. Steve Nash also coming off the bench in this game and having 11 points. I mean, Jason Kidd, Kevin Johnson, and Steve Nash were all on the same team together. That's obviously, Steve Nash was nothing yet, but that's just kind of wild how that turned out. And Kevin Johnson was getting close to the end of his career. I think he was dealing with either dealing with injuries or soon to be dealing with injuries, although he played 50 minutes in this game. So
Yeah, and the other interesting names, Rex Chapman, of course, of the Suns, 28 points. Danny Manning led the Suns in scoring with 35, but he did that all off the bench, which was interesting. Portland, Brian Grant. Yes, that Brian Grant led them in minutes with 61, in points with 34, and in rebounds with 17. Isaiah Ryder, he had 59 minutes, 35 points, 11 rebounds as well. And this would be the first four overtime game ever for Phoenix and the third for the Blazers. So yes, they keep coming off.
Yes. Sabonis had 31 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists in 50 minutes. So good times for him. And then we go all the way to 2012, the Atlanta Hawks again against the Utah Jazz, 139-133, the Hawks winning. Four Jazz, including Paul Millsap, had over 50 minutes played. Of course, this was before Millsap played with the Hawks. Meanwhile, the Hawks had three players 50 minutes played, including Joe Johnson with 37 points in the game. Marvin Williams played 43 minutes off the game. And Josh Smith had a Josh Smith 9 for 26 from the field.
I couldn't find out where the shots came from, but I imagine they all came from at least 17 feet plus. So
that sounds familiar, yes.
Despite being wide open, and he still pulled up from 17 feet, most likely. So,
Josh Smith, if only.
Man, I remember that there was a, I think it was a playoff series against the Bulls, and I remember, like, it might have been the last year of Josh Smith in Atlanta or whatever, but, like, he pulled up from three, and you could just hear, there was, like, multiple times in this game where the crowd just groaned, like, no,
oh,
don't.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like,
that was
don't.
Common toward the end.
And just clank, and he's like, ah, oh, darn. Like, I've never heard a fan base be like, no, please don't. Like, you're so much better. Why are you doing this? Who told you to do this? Like,
yes. Kirk Heinrich played 43 minutes in this game. Josh Smith actually only played 30 minutes. He fouled out during the game, so he must have been in foul trouble.
26 shots in 30 minutes. That's,
yeah.
Oh, I love it. He's going to get his, hey.
Yeah.
Got me 30 minutes in the game. I'm going to do all I can. And get a bunch of fouls, too. I love Josh Smith. I miss him.
Yes. Yes. So they combined for just 4 points during the first overtime, which is the second lowest in NBA history. We already talked about the 0 points in those overtimes in that six overtime game. This was during the lockout year too. This is right toward the end of that season, obviously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if there's anything else that's really that interesting about this one. Gordon Hayward played 57 minutes in the game and only 19 points, but as we mentioned, Al Jefferson, 28 points. Pretty good game for him. Zaza Pachulia, yeah. 54 minutes, 15 points, 20 rebounds. That's a nice stat line.
Yeah, I think the most interesting part about this game probably is the Jazz were down big after two quarters. They were down 55-38 and then scored 34 in the third to get back in the game and force the four overtime. But yeah, it looked like a sleeper at halftime, 55-38, yes. And ends up hopefully he didn't leave or go to beat traffic because you missed a hell of a game. So
yes, one of the first games that I ever went to in the late 06 maybe. It was a Jazz Hawks game where the Hawks were up 19 in the fourth quarter and then ended up blowing the lead and losing the the game. And I went to at least 9 Hawks
games. And you stayed a Hawks fan for some reason.
I went to at least 9 Hawks games before they actually won one in person for me. It was right before I moved away from Atlanta. So good times.
So thankfully you left and now they had some success afterwards. But
pretty much, yeah, exactly. So, then also from 2015, the Pistons 147, the Bulls 144. This is December 18, 2015. And Andre Drummond with 33 points, 21 rebounds. Jimmy Butler had 43 points. Derrick Rose, back when he played for the Bulls, 34 points. And Pau Gasol, 30 points, 15 rebounds. So you're going to play a long time, you're going to get those stat lines.
I thought this one was interesting. Tony Snell, who started for the Bulls, he played 38 minutes, scored only 3 points, but was a plus +9. So, playing some solid defense in this four of ten game, I guess. So that's thought that was just interesting. 38 minutes, only 3 points, but hey, that's not too bad. But
what I was going to say, what's really interesting is that in the third overtime, both teams scored 4 points. In the fourth overtime, the Pistons scored 20 points and the Bulls scored 17 points. But the defense definitely, I think, got a little fatigued.
Like,
there.
All right, we're done. Like, we got to go home. And the Bulls, funny enough, they had to board a flight. They had a Saturday night game in New York after that. This is a Friday night game, so they had to be in New York on Saturday night at that point. Not surprisingly, they got to New York and they got trounced. They lost 107-91, so they were definitely tired.
Hard to blame them for that one. And of course, the most recent game, the Hawks beating the Knicks 142-139. And Paul Millsap, 60 minutes, 37 points, 19 rebounds, 7 assists, and played 35 straight minutes.
That's great, yeah. The interesting parts about this game, of course, Carmelo Anthony forcing 2 overtimes by himself. I like this, too. The Knicks shot 51 threes. They only made 18, though, so maybe not the best strategy.
Yeah, well, 35%. That's actually not that bad.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, I suppose when it's just that high of a number, it gets pretty insane. But, yeah, Carmelo led the Knicks with 45. He was the only Knick over 20 points, which is an interesting kind of spread of point totals. This, I think we can blame this guy entirely for this game going to 4 overtimes. Kylo Quinn, he had 12 rebounds, not bad, but he was 1 of 9 from the floor. So, come on, Kyle. Like, I'm trying to imagine Kylo Quinn even taking 9 shots in a game. Why, like, that even happened. But, and then on your end, your Atlanta Hawks, I'm going to say the man who caused this game to be 4 overtime, who caused, you know, the Hawk fans to just love and adore him, the newly acquired Mike Dunleavy. He played 22 minutes off the bench and was plus 21.
Yeah.
Plus 21 for old Mike Dunleavy. Didn't want to play. They got him, you know, convinced them. Budenholzer said, hey, come on.
He didn't play down the stretch because I started watching the game sometime in the fourth quarter and watched all the overtimes. And, I didn't get to see Dunleavy's one of my least favorite players. So I'm a little bit, you know, not thrilled about seeing him on the Hawks. But, you know, regardless. Dennis Schroeder also, he twice missed free throws that would have put the Hawks up by 4 with like 10 seconds or less to play. And then in 2 instances, the Hawks or the Knicks made 3-pointers to tie it at the end of quarter or overtime. So
what I loved about this game more than anything is that how close it almost came to being 5 overtime. Because Courtney Lee was correct. Yeah. He took the 3. Yeah, right. I mean, it rims out. It's just like it's super, super close of him bringing that game to a 5th overtime. I remember watching that just being like, oh my god, I wish, like, because when it gets to that point, you just want this game to go on forever. Like, you do never want it to end because you want to be, you know, you're sitting down, you're watching it, you want to see it go on forever and ever and ever. So that was a little disheartening that rolled out, but I would have done well with a 5 overtime game, but I think the players are probably happy it was only 4. So
yeah, I would imagine so, absolutely. So all right, everyone. Well, thanks for checking this out. Of course, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcast. Just search for The Step Back Day to Day. And if you enjoy this look at NBA history, we do a lot more of this on our Over and Back NBA podcast, which you can also find in the same places. You can find both podcasts at The Step Back at fansided.com. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back again soon.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy 2, get 2 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.